Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight I'm proud to bring you Sword and Sandal Cinema. But first, a quick legend of Hercules, this one called Hercules Amongst the North Americans. In 1986, a compilation of Hercules' amazing adventures in our nation was published by Penguin Books with a warning that it wasn't one of the classic titles. The chronicler, Mark Marek, had previously sold these tales to such venerable venues as High Times and the National Lampoon. Marek's frenetically drawn comic strips, detailed maps, colorful paintings, and wise commentary lay bare the brave soul of Greece's greatest hero as he wends his way through Americana Bizarro Land. Marek's Hercules is one part Euripides and two parts peplum, and I'm a very big fan of both. Hercules battles a giant flying moose, harrows a bleak carnal underworld, topples heavy metal gods, and tackles beefy football players. He triumphs in his 348th and 349th labors and chastises modern religious leaders who doubt the gods. Hercules finds love, lust, lost treasures, heroic quests galore, and even a chance to atone for recent misdeeds in the pages of this tome. As if this wasn't enough, and I've only scratched the surface of the tales, there's even a 4-star guide to Greek restaurants authorized by Hercules himself. How can anyone possibly top that? Hercules Among the North Americans is, alas, long out of print and quite difficult to find. Its bold originality and quirky humor, laden with social commentary through anachronism, make quest easy to locate and worthy of an endeavor for any aspiring hero. Happy hunting. And now onward to Sword and Sandal Cinema with Michael Del Russi in part one. Greetings, Michael. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. I'm glad to be here. I'd like to open up the program, if I can, with some reflections that I've been meditating on, and especially when it concerns the Greek gods themselves. One of the reasons why I like to title my segment When the Gods Touch the Earth, you know, in doing some research and widening my own spectrum, if you will, in terms of how valuable the Greek myths and the Greek gods were to civilization. I came to discover that they predated Christianity by at least 700 years.
The archaeology practices them a few thousand years before the Common Era.
Yes. And we are looking at least from what I've been able to discover so far, and I'm sure your knowledge is even more vast in this area, obviously, than mine is, but we're looking at least a 700-year difference between when the Greek gods did indeed touch the earth and Christianity. I'm sure it's much more than that. As a result, as we know, as we continue our studies in this area, some of the stories remarkably resemble each other, both in terms of Christianity and Greek myths, the parallel between the two. Applying logical mind, one has to recognize the possibility that much more may have been borrowed from the Greeks. So, you know, that's why I am so enthusiastic and motivated to speak about what the Greek gods, the Greek myths, the Greek civilization in a whole has given the world. Those are the comments I'd like to open with tonight, if I can. So it's great to be here.
That would be awesome. And it's great to have you here.
Thank you so much. And I'd also like to mention that there's a magazine that I think has been completed. I think I may have mentioned it to you, called By the Gods.
Yes, you told me about that.
But here's what I've been able to find out so far. Not much. It evidently is ready. I went to what appears to be an ordering site. It's called Mad Cloud. But when I went to the site, I don't see any order form or any place you can actually order the magazine. It's very unusual. They're saying that it is ready. It is available. The site is called MagCloud, all one word. They even have what appears to be an ordering and checkout form, but it appears to be incomplete. Unless I'm looking at this wrong, anyone else that can do some research to support us in this endeavor, I'd be enthused. I do not see any area where I can actually order the publication. I don't know exactly what this is all about. They even have an area where they say ordering and checkout. But I'm going down the list, and again, I don't see where I can actually come up with an order form. So I know they're saying it. Yes.
So we'll search for it tomorrow. We'll talk, and you could walk me through what you've done, and let me explore also, and let's see what we could find. It looked, from what you sent me, it looked very good, and I was very excited by it. I wondered if you had contact information so that I can contact them and see if we can get them on the show.
Yes, I would love that, and I'll continue to do my research and share with you whatever I uncover. But so far, it looks... It looks like we have incomplete information, I would say. So I'll continue to research, and if I stumble upon anything concrete, I'll certainly share it with you. But I'm excited about it, and as most Sword Sandal fans, I'm sure, are. And so I will share that information with you as soon as I get an update here somehow. But I wanted to mention that to the fans. It's certainly a magazine we all should be supporting. It looks like it's conscientiously put together. The spirit is in it. The spirit is there, if you will. So whatever I find out, I will share with you.
Thank you. And I will do the same.
I came across a quote that I'd like to also share from Socrates that I thought was interesting and very supportive. He said, "No man has the right to be an amateur in the matter of physical training. It is a shame for a man to grow old without seeing the beauty and strength of which the body is capable." You know, and this solidifies again what made the Greeks so special when it came to this area. They saw, to them, the human body was divine, and to maximize the potential of the human body was divine. And I just think that's a great quote, and I wanted to share that with the listeners also. It certainly inspired me.
Yeah, that is right. I've started posting quotes from the philosophers and the playwrights and everybody again. I do that periodically, and then I'll stop and I'll start. I just started again. So we're on the same wavelength.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to also, if I can, petition you on your latest training and diet experiences. I think this is an important part of the program, something I'll have to do on my segment of the program. And I'd like to hear what you've been doing with your training, and I'll briefly share what's happening with mine. What is the latest in terms of your training?
Sure. Physical training, I'm currently in physical therapy for my spinal arthritis, stenosis, bone spurs, and bulging discs. So that remains a major challenge at this point. I'm having some difficulty walking, and I can't sit still in position for too long, or sit too long, or lie down too long because of the pain in my lower back. But I'm going to physical therapy twice a week. They gave me mostly back and leg exercises, and I do them in physical therapy, and then I break them up and do them at home as well once or twice a week. So I'm getting legs and back basically four times a week, which is good. And then the other days I'm doing the rest of my body. Today, for instance, I did hands, fingers, wrists, forearms. Traps, midsection, abdominals, calves, ankles, feet, and toes. So that's what I did today, and I'm planning on, before bed, doing my head and face and neck and jaw and voice exercises. So that'll be my workout for today. In terms of food, as you know, I'm diabetic type 2, and I developed some other complications with that. So adjusting the diet has been a long and challenging endeavor, but I finally think I have the diet right. My blood has gone down considerably, a couple of hundred points, and it's stayed there now for a month, and it's in the hundreds. So I just need to lower it to the very low hundreds or the double digits, and I'm there, and I just got to keep it there. So that's a journey that continues, but it's been in the hundreds now for quite a while. So I'm very encouraged by that result.
Wonderful.
How about yours?
How about your supplement? Do you feel there's been any supplements that have assisted you in reaching your goals, or do you feel it's mainly just the foods transitions? Do you have a grip on this?
Well, I cut back the vitamins because I've been prescribed medication. So, it's very difficult to determine sometimes what will counteract. So in terms of vitamins, I'm taking a B vitamin complex a few times a week and then B12 once or twice a week on the days that I don't take the B complex. The reason for the B12 is because some of the medications for the diabetes, they destroy B12 and you become deficient.
Yes.
So to try to balance this diet, I've been making sure I take B vitamins. And currently I'm taking berberine because it works good with metformin. And I'm taking magnesium citrate, again, not every day, every couple of days, to help in my digestion and so forth. That's pretty much it. Occasionally, I'll take fish oil and Ocuvite 50s for my eyes. That's consistently kept my eyes clear, but again, not every day. And I've been taking periodically COQ12 and bitter melon and a bunch of vitamins that help out. But mostly I'm focusing on the ones that I mentioned as a regular, and the other ones are a couple times a week whenever I get the chance.
Well, we know that magnesium can lower blood sugar. Berberine, of it so far, most studies that I've researched seem to be positive. And
yes.
Turmeric has also been shown in some studies to lower blood sugar. But as you pointed out, you're already on medication, so you don't want to go overboard with these supplements. But I think you're wise.
That was today's challenge. Yes. Today, my blood pressure and my has been getting very low, and I've never had low blood pressure before. So I suspect that something that I'm taking, it could be one of the medications, which when I researched it, does cause reduction in blood pressure, or it could be one of the vitamins, several of which, or it could be what I'm eating. Like I've been eating beets, and beets are known to reduce blood pressure. So I have to play around till my blood pressure is no longer a problem. But today it's lower than it's ever been when I went to the physical therapy. So I need to address that very quickly.
So have you been using beet powder or just eating beets themselves?
Both. I've been eating pre-cooked beets occasionally with my meals, maybe figure like 2-3 times a week. And I have maybe 4 shakes a week, protein shakes. 2 of them are vanilla flavored and 2 of them are berries with beet root powder. So
okay.
Yeah, so I like the beetroot powder. I've mixed it into yogurt, again, with a handful of berries and some nuts, and it makes for good lunch or snack.
Well, I like it also, yes, and it does provide the body with nitric oxide, which we know can enhance blood flow, and it's good for the cardiovascular system on a whole. But, yeah, I mean, at certain times it may create such an environment where your blood pressure drops too low. As you pointed out, that's why we're adventurers. Every day is an adventure when it comes to just trying to maintain our optimum health. That's what makes us champions, all of us, And that's what the journey is all about. So, every day, we try to look at every day as a positive challenge rather than a negative. And I think it's good to see the journey that way. It is, as I once said and continue to say, it's the golden fleece of vitality in terms of the human body. So I like the way you're keeping track of things. It's inspiring, and we all need to move in that direction on a daily basis where our own health is concerned. Your doctor's not going to be there to encourage you on a daily basis. We have to do it ourselves, and we have to be the champions of our own physical vitality. So I like the way you're keeping track of things. It's very inspiring, certainly.
And it's become difficult to see doctors now. I thought that I was the only one having difficulties, and my wife, but it seems a lot of people are telling me they have to wait like a month for a doctor's appointment.
I'm hearing this, yes. I'm hearing this. As a matter of fact, I'm scheduled for both a colonoscopy and an endoscopy. I decided hesitantly to get them done both at the same day and get it over with. But I have to wait till November 25th for that to take place. I like the physician, my initial meeting with him. It's interesting. I told him that my wishes were to go without sedation, but he was very hesitant to go that direction. Ultimately, I agreed to sedation, but I asked him, could we please keep it light? I do not want to be under complete anesthesia. It's just a thing with me. I've been there before. Everything's always been fine. But I understand in Europe, most of the time, they're more than happy to adhere to your request. It's interesting. I spoke to my primary care beforehand, and I said, do you think they will refuse me? He said, I don't see why they should. But this guy seemed very hesitant to go forward with me unless I'm in complete sedation. But he did promise to keep it light, so I'm hesitantly moving forward with it. I just don't understand what the problem is because, again, you know, it's a roll of the dice. The first endoscopy and the first colonoscopy I ever had, which was almost 15 years ago now, were done without anesthesia, and I was fine because I didn't have insurance at the time. And the gentleman, you know, he knew what he was doing, and everything turned out fine. But this physician looks like a young man, looks very competent. He was very hesitant to agree to that. So, you know, when it comes to our medical care, we can't always get what we want, but
right.
We try.
Yeah, I had a colonoscopy a few years ago, and they put me on. It happened very quickly. I was awake 1 second, I was asleep the next second, and then I woke up when it was over. So I guess they can control that now. And once in the emergency room when I had gone, they put me under with something. And I was out like a light before I even realized what was happening. And then I woke up like, you know, and I had like missing time, like when UFO people get abducted. I don't know what happened. And it didn't seem like a lot of time had passed. It seemed like I just went out and then I was back, and it was whatever they were doing in the emergency room was over too.
Well, that's the drug they use, which right now I cannot remember the name of it. It's very effective, and from what I understand, it's very safe. It's just a thing with me at this point in my life. You know, you develop certain anxieties as you get older.
Of course.
And you question certain things. But at any rate, I think it's good to share these experiences with our listeners and our fellow champions, because it gives them a view of what's happening, opposing views of what's happening and our experiences. So I think it's all worthwhile.
I think it's all worthwhile too. And I'm starting a separate show just on aging and anti-aging. And of course, you're going to be my co-host in that show. So I'll keep you posted on that.
I'm very excited to hear that. I have lots of information that I'd like to share. So I'd certainly be looking forward to that opportunity.
And I like your choice of Sword and Sandal Cinema topics for today too. And I'll share something quick. I might have shared it before, but when I was growing up in Greece, they had traveling muscle men. They used to travel around the villagers, and there were also like traveling magicians, traveling movies. So a lot of traveling and meeting in the public square of the Agora, the market area. Anyway, I got to speak to several of the wandering Hercules's and Samsons, and I loved what they did, and I wanted to do that myself. And they were called, despite Hercules and Samson or any other strongman name, you know, but Hercules and Samson predominated, they were called Machistes, Machistes. So all of these guys collectively, you know, they were Machistes, and they would pass by the village and do katorfomata, do feats, you know, or accomplishments. And so Machiste to me has always reminded me of those living, breathing muscle men who wandered around like Machiste wanders around and had adventures in the villages. One of them, I found out his name. I did some internet searching, and I found his name. I found some videos made of him and so forth. But the other ones, I didn't remember enough to dig up any details on them.
Well, yeah, you know, and so in the little bit of time we have, let's share such honor Machiste if we can. I happened to do some research on him, and I was interested to discover that there were Machiste films that predated the '60s, the golden age of sword and sandal films. In fact, we were going back to the early 1900s. So what I'd like to do quickly is just share some of the titles. Cannot go beyond that right now, but some of the titles are a lot of fun, frankly. We have one called The Marvelous Machiste, made in 1915. Machiste the Ranger, made in 1916. Machiste the Warrior, made in 1916. Machiste the Athlete, made in 1917. Machiste the Clairvoyant, made in 1917.
Oh, wow.
Machiste the Detective, made in 1917. Machiste the Tourist, made in 1917. Machiste the Sleepwalker, made in 1918. I don't know how they came up with some of these titles. Machiste, Revenge of Machiste in 1919. Machiste's Will, made in 1919. This is remarkable. I would love to see some of these films. Machiste's Journey, made in 1919. Machiste the First, made in 1919. Machiste versus Death, made in 1919. Machiste in Love, made 1919. Machiste on Vacation, made 1920. And the last one, which, believe it or not, I did see, I think, on YouTube many years ago, was Machiste in Hell.
Yes.
1925. Did you see any of these?
I saw Machiste in Hell. In fact, I have Machiste in Hell on DVD. And you didn't mention Cabiria. Cabiria was one of the first appearances of Machiste. And it's a European gentleman in blackface, you know, like we had in this country at the time, people used to pretend to be black people.
Yes.
So in Cabiria, the person playing Machiste pretended to be like of African descent, but it was makeup. And he was
really?
A strong man, and I think it happened during the fall of Rome. And that I have on DVD also. That took a long time to find a copy of Cabiria. And I believe I've seen a couple of the other ones, and I found a book about Machiste and the Machiste films. I haven't finished reading it. But I put the cover on the promo for tonight's show. So that picture I have in the promo, that's from the book on Machiste.
Very good. Where did you find that book?
I'm pretty sure nine out of 10, I found it on Amazon. I typed in Machiste to see what was new, and I saw this book. So I scarfed it up as quickly as I could, because sometimes things come and go on Amazon. So I'll get you the information, and I'll send it to you via a personal message, and I'll check to see if it's still on Amazon. If it is, I'll send you the link.
That'd be great. Thank you. I'll share some information that I uncovered in my own research if I can quickly.
Sure.
He's one of the oldest characters in cinema, created by, this is one of the creators, Giovanni Pastorone. He has been featured throughout the history of Italian cinema from the 1910s to the mid-1960s. Many of the 1960s Peplum movies featured Maciste were retitled in other countries, substituting more popular names like Hercules, Goliath, and Samson. Mark Forrest was the actor who played the character the most, according to this research, which was seven times. Bartolomeo Pagno, I think I'm pronouncing this right, starred in a series of at least 26 sequels. Then decades later, after Steve Reeves' Hercules, Maciste was revived by Italian filmmakers for a series of over 25 sound films, most made between 1960 and 1965. That's quite a history.
Yes, it is.
And that's what I've been able to uncover so far. I'm going to continue to research the character because the Sword and Sandal cinema is ripe with the adventures of Maciste, so I think it's worth learning as much as we can about the character.
I agree with you, and thank you for opening up the door to that, and we'll do a Maciste tribute each Sword and Sandal cinema, and eventually we'll learn about Detective Maciste and Maciste on Vacation. All those other adventures.
Very interesting. Yes, I'd love to see. Love to hear more about it.
Thank you, Michael. How can people get in contact with you, and how can they tap into your wonderful work?
Well, I have a prayer ministry. I do white light prayer energy work, and all they have to do is write to me at Michael Del Rossi, Box 129, Caldwell, New Jersey, 07006. And I also have a very informative creative health manual. It deals with everything, herbology, diet, essential oils, just about everything you can think of. When I think it creates a great foundation for integrative nutrition. And that's $7 a copy. And they can write to me again at Michael Del Rossi, P.O. Box 129, Caldwell, New Jersey, 07006.
Thank you very much, my friend. There's a box on its way to you, and a new box is starting. So at some point soon, that box will be on its way to you as well.
Oh, thank you so much, sir. Thank you.
Thanks for everything. Be well, and I'm honored we're on this journey together, and I look forward to our future adventures.
A real blessing. Thank you, and thank you to all of the champions for listening in.
Thank you. And now onwards to part two of our show with Sedna of Kemet, also known as Michael K. Waterman. Greetings and welcome, Michael. How are you?
Greetings and welcome, Hercules. I'm very well, thank you. I've had quite a wonderful day. Very interesting day.
I'm very
day.
Happy to hear that.
I've put together the beginnings of a website for the Pernateru, my temple.
Awesome.
And also I created and finished another 20 wands. I have become the wand master.
Yes, the wand king.
Well, you're going to see, hopefully, if I can get there tomorrow, I'm going to bring two yours and Athena's with me. And I have many more.
Tomorrow's been canceled.
I sent
the notice out.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, you know what? It's actually better. I wasn't sure how I was going to get there. Are we going to do Zoom instead?
Not tomorrow. Tomorrow,
oh, okay.
There was a family medical emergency. So you're basically taking care of that. So I'm going to call everybody tomorrow. I was intending to do it tonight, but I got out of physical therapy very late, and I'm having difficulty moving around. So I'm leaving it for tomorrow.
Listen, you got to take care of you. You are the, all roads lead to Rome. All of our roads lead to Hercules. So you got to take care of you. You're our primary everything.
Thank you, sir. Yes, I definitely will, and I'm honored by your words.
I want to say something.
Sure.
For the last month now, I have been off and on with a company called Nile Valley Cat Rescue.
Oh, wow.
No, it's not positive.
Oh,
yesterday,
it's not positive.
2 days ago. Well, here, 2 days ago, I called the lady, I won't mention her name, and I asked her what was the status on my cat. She got me all excited. I've had pictures. It's kind of like, you know, adopting a child. Well, she says to me yesterday that the cat has escaped from the compound in Cairo. Now, I don't know if you've ever been to Egypt, but if you're in the middle part of Egypt, in the main part of Cairo, there's all these bazaars. It looks like right out of Indiana Jones. There's bazaars, there's stores, there's little restaurants and shops and little hotels. If that cat is gone, it's gone. But here's my point. This is the second cat she's done this to me with. So I am not going to deal with them anymore. She broke my heart. I really wanted this cat, and now it's gone. It ran away. It's a good thing I didn't give her any money, you know. But now what I'm going to do is I'm looking for a little orange kitten, and it's not that hard to do. And so what I will do is come here to beautiful New Jersey, and I will find a new cat.
Good.
I just feel heartbroken. This was an Egyptian cat. It was very special, and I feel very sad. But meanwhile, enough of that. On to more positive things. The temple is going to be on a website, and we want to talk about my beautiful, gorgeous goddess, Ursula Andress, in the 1965 version of She Who Must Be Obeyed. It's a very interesting movie, and some of it is based on ancient Egyptian mythology, which is really very cool. It's a Pinewood Studios film, so you know you've got my heroes in there. You've got Peter Cushing and, of course, the absolutely wonderful Christopher Lee, who plays the high priest. It's almost the same costume he wears in the beginning of The Mummy from Pinewood. I actually think it is the same costume. The other thing is, there's a robe that one of the guys is wearing in the ritual, that she's got this initiation ritual. And I had to look twice. It is the same robe that the guy who plays Potionis in Liz Taylor's Cleopatra is wearing. So I know borrowed the costume. It's so, you know, you see that a lot. In a lot of these Pinewood Studio Hammer films, you'll see a lot of people that they die in a crowd scene and a couple of hours later they're back. So that's the way this movie is done. It's kind of, can I use the word schlocky?
Yes, you can.
It's bad. Yeah, it's a B movie, B for bad. Ursula, who is wearing the head, I guess it's an owl crown on her head with feathers and all. It's really weird. Is playing an ancient Egyptian queen, a blonde ancient Egyptian queen with really heavy eyeliner. travels across the Nile Valley into somewhere, and during a sandstorm, her caravan, which is like consists of hundreds of people, take refuge in a cave. And somewhere along the line in the cave, she discovers this blue flame of eternity. Now, the odd thing is, in the legend of the goddess Isis, where she's trying to find Osiris's body, and it ends up lodged in a column in Persia, Babylon, Bablos. He bathes the king's child, much to the horror of his mother, in a blue flame of eternity. And the woman says, "Stop that!" And you know, Isis takes him out of the fire so the kid's not roasted because it's a magic flame. And she hands him back to her spine, be like that. And they give her the column out of the palace. They hack a column out of the palace, why the roof didn't fall in. And she gets Osiris, and she goes on her merry way. Anyway, not to confuse everybody. So Ursula Andress is this beautiful queen, of course. And she bathes in this flame, and she becomes an immortal. And so in order to keep that up, she has to make sacrifices, of course. So throughout the whole film, they have a fire pit that they throw people in, or lava pit or something. You're never really so sure. Anyway, so she's this immortal goddess that thousands of years earlier, her lover has died. And she has his coins minted, and she's got his body. Anyway, now we're ahead into 1965. And then a British archaeologist, I know. It's schlocky, so it's fun. But they're all running around in these, you know, interesting African tribesmen costumes and Egyptian, kind of Egyptian, Roman, Greek, whatever was in the costume department, costumes on. And it's kind of fun, though. It's cute. And so this archaeologist is digging around, and they get captured by this African tribe that drags them in front of Ursula Andress. And she looks at this guy, who is John Richardson, no relation to Ralph, I don't think. But he's this handsome blonde actor. He's in a lot of cool movies. And Ursula goes, oh, my God, falls madly in love with him. And she insists he's the reincarnation of this high priest that she was in love with, her prince. So, you know, someday my prince might come, and who knows, 4,000 years from now, here he is. So that's kind of cool. Anyway, so he takes a potion that she gives him, and he is convinced now that he's this prince. So in the meantime, as he always does in everything, Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee are conspiring against the queen because they don't want this guy here. He's a modern person, and he'll bring the modern world into this. And they don't want that. So they're going to do – I think Peter Cushing is a collaborator of the prince, the other archaeologist. Christopher Lee is the high priest. He's always the evil one. He does it very well. He's also the best – the second best Sherlock Holmes there ever was. My favorite, of course, is Basil Rathbone. And they were friends. They were both 6'5", which is – I'm 5'8", so that's scary to me. Anyway, so in the meantime – They're going to try to convince this guy to not the young archaeologist to get out of there. And meanwhile, and Christopher Lee, of course, wants him dead because if he goes out, he may take Ursula with him. And she's their queen, and she's the one that's kept up with the rituals for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. So this African tribe conspires with Christopher Lee to kill the English archaeologist. And in the meantime, there's a young girl who falls in love with him. And there's a very weird scene where they kidnap her and they lower her down into a pit. You probably saw this, Hercules. And
yes,
all of a sudden she comes back up.
Seen,
and all, yeah.
I've seen several.
And she comes back up and all she is is. She comes up and all she is ashes. And I think Peter Cushing's her father, and he's all upset. He's carrying on. And he's going to, you know, get that the English, the other guy out of there, John Robert Richardson out of there. And meanwhile, the tribe, of course, attacks. And the Egyptians, the pro-Egyptians, are fighting the African tribes. The John Richardson comes through. And he has bathed in the flame of immortality now. And then what happens is Ursula goes in next. And, of course, now the flame has changed, and so now she's going to get fried. And now he's going to wait for thousands of years for her. He's missed his queen, his high priestess. It's really interesting, though. It's kind of a Romeo and Juliet Egyptian style. She's waited forever for him, and then he died, and he comes back, and now she's around, and then she dies, and he's got to wait for her. But it's got a lot of interesting rituals and ceremonies that were actually true in African traditions more than ancient Egyptian, but that blue flame does come from Isis. It's something she actually did to bring to get Osiris' body back. And they say that she actually used this thing. Now, I was also watching all day Ancient Aliens. You know how long that thing goes on. Well, they had a special on ancient Egyptians, and I was looking at things that they were talking about them doing. And this particular ritual was fire, blue fire. And, you know, I'm very big on using blue healing crystals, was sent to heal people. So this is kind of interesting that came up that way. Ursula's costumes are silly. I don't think, it looks like she has a turkey on her head at one time. I don't know. It's supposed to be the vulture crown, which, if you've seen in any tradition in Egypt, is made out of gold. It's not made out of feathers. I don't know who came up with that idea. I guess it's a low-budget film, so feathers were cheaper. You know, that's
or it's a temporary crown when the other crown is being polished or repaired. That's the
the gold. when she bathed in the flame, the gold became real feathered, real bird. And I guess I hate the bird. I don't know. The first time I saw this in the newspapers back in the 60s, I'm looking and I'm going, what the hell is that on her head? It was the funniest thing. But she's so beautiful, you don't care.
Beyond the one with Ursula Andress.
There was one. Somewhere in the 1930s, there was a version.
Yes.
There was
and
a version in the 1920s.
Another version.
And in the 1920s, there's a version. And
mm-hmm.
I found that there's also a Japanese anime version.
That I didn't know.
That was from
Sandal Bergman, Conan the Barbarian, played it. Played she as well at one point. I have that on DVD somewhere in a box.
I love Sandal Bergman. I love her in Red Sonja, where she plays the evil queen. She's so good. The first time I ever saw her was in All That Jazz.
All That Jazz, yeah.
She plays her big scene is Take Off With Us, and she does quite a bit. And she's a great dancer and singer. I'd never heard of her before that. And then the next time I saw her, she was Valeria in Conan the Barbarian.
Conan the Barbarian,
just so good, right? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And what can you say about Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee? One of the greatest monsters ever, you know? I think that Christopher Lee was one of the best Draculas. And Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee both played the mummy at one time or another. Christopher Lee played a doctor. Peter Cushing played the doctor to Deborah Padgett's beautiful girl, damsel in distress, to Christopher Lee's mummy. So there was a lot going on. Hammer films are some of my favorite films. You get the great Vincent Price in there and Peter Lorre and Boris Karloff. You can't go wrong. And I know why that costume is borrowed there. Cleopatra with Liz Taylor started out in Pinewood Studios. And 20th Century Fox said, this is not going well. Forgive me, I have to have some drink.
It's okay. You want to take a short break? I'll put a song on?
I just need 2 seconds to have a drink.
Okay.
As my dad would say, all better.
good.
I was laying down, I'm talking, and probably something went down the wrong way. Who knows?
It happens.
But it's all right now. It was, okay. So it's a great fun movie. You got to take it with tongue in cheek. I never saw the one with Sandal Bergman. I'm sure it's better. Was that in the 70s?
The 80s, I think.
Okay, probably after Red Sonja.
Yes, after Red Sonja, Conan the Barbarian. She played in, I think it's a futuristic version of, if I remember correctly, it's been a while.
Well, this is kind of a, in a way, kind of an homage to Journey to the Center of the Earth also, because this is a civilization that's been under a cave and doesn't come up for the surface. And hasn't for thousands and thousands of years. And they perpetuated the ancient Egyptian traditions, which is what kind of drew my attention in the first place. But when I saw the costuming and some of the other things that were going on, even as a young man, I got a giggle out of it. I thought, oh, come on, you know. But this is what was going on in those days. And, you know, Ursula was one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen in my life. She's more famous for playing one of the Bond girls. She's, she has all the attributes, I'll be nice, that the Bond girls had. She has long blonde hair, and she was very well endowed, indeed, and quite beautiful. So Sean Connery actually picked her for one of the movies that she was in. And so she's actually a friend of mine, I will say. She's 80-something now. She lives in Switzerland with her girlfriend, and her girlfriend's name is, and Ursula Andress, for all her beauty and charm, is probably about 5 foot if she's lucky. And her girlfriend, Ursula, is 6 foot. And they've been together about, 50 years.
Oh, wow.
So in a way, it's another, I will call it another beautiful lesbian couple. And she had an affair also with Harry Hamlin, if you remember. She had a child with him.
Yes, I remember.
I think that was in the 70s. I don't, whenever his, whenever Clash of the Titans came out, was that 80 or in the 70s?
That was, I think, in the early 80s, because I remember, I remember seeing the plastic toys in Astoria, and I lived in Astoria in 1980.
I love Astoria.
Me too.
Very nice place. I would live there now, but I don't have, you need a gold card just to walk in the door anymore. It's not.
Back then it was Greek neighborhood, and it was affordable.
It's like Woodside.
Woodside now is affordable too.
No, now it's Little Egypt, which is interesting. You've got all these cab drivers and people that own restaurants and things that own, that are settled in Egyptian people that have settled in Astoria, Woodside, which is kind of fun. I would go there. I would love that, actually. But I'm in beautiful, glamorous downtown Newark. And that's
okay.
I'll be here 9 years already.
Wow.
Everything. And I got to say, where I live, which is the Ironbound, is actually a very nice part of Newark, New Jersey. I have great restaurants. It's relatively quiet around here. Portuguese, French, Brazilian, Greek. There's one Greek place. A lot of Spanish and different Latin American peoples and Caribbean peoples. And so I eat very well. We have wonderful, wonderful foods in this area.
It sounds like it. Yeah, I imagine.
I mean, except for my crazy neighbors upstairs, I really have no complaint where I am. And I've been busy since I retired making amulets and charms and wands and ushabtis and all kinds of amazing magical tools. You stimulated me and excited me to do this in a lot of ways because I found, you said, find an outlet for my energies, and this is one of them. It's a really wonderful thing. It is really working with all the things that we're working with. I'm teaching people about energy. You said that you received a message about you with I'm calling them scepters more than wands, a scepter with crystals and a cluster of crystals at the top. Well, this is what I've created for you. Yours is mostly blue and clear quartzes. Athena is gold and pinks, rose colors. And I knew that, and it's much longer. It's more like her spear. In fact, I was looking for a spear head to put on top of it. I think that's important. And I don't know what to make that out of. I was thinking shale.
We'll have to do a Zoom episode just on the wands.
I'd love to, sure. But to get back to this film, it was a fun film. You've got to take it with a grain of salt. It has a lot of, a lot of the elements that you have in a lot of the Hercules movies, and that's why I chose this of the time. You've got, a hero and an eternal goddess queen who is in love with him, which is very much like the Greek goddesses. If you go back to the Trojan War, have Athena and Aphrodite, and the third one was Minerva? There were three goddesses.
Minerva is the same as Athena. Three goddesses of the Trojan War were Hera, they were Athena, and they were Aphrodite.
It's Hera that, I don't know, she's going to be very mad at me. I always forget that was Hera that's in there. But in any case, you've got goddesses falling in love with a young man, and they make him make a choice. Well, in this case, you've got a quasi-Egyptian goddess/queen who falls in love with a man that she believes is her past love, a reincarnation of her past lover. And that's kind of interesting. because it goes back again to Isis. Osiris died. She brought him back to life. But is that reincarnation in a way? She brought him back to life to give, you know, to impregnate herself with Horus. And this woman also, this goddess, she wants, you know, she wants to have descendants, but she wants them with her original lover. And when she sees this guy with his golden blonde wavy hair and green eyes, he looks exactly like the coins she has, which look like ancient Roman coins rather than Egyptian. So I'm wondering, was she a stray Ptolemy? Is she a Ptolemaic queen that went awry? Well, she has blondish, longish gold blonde hair. And they say Alexander had blonde hair. And that's how the Ptolemies had. And so the Greek Ptolemies that came with Alexander also had blonde and brown hair and red hair. So, you know, that gives a different look of those people. But she's, you know, she's actually Austrian, from Vienna, I think she is. And she's, like, unreal beautiful. My favorite thing I think she did was Rio Bravo, I think with John Wayne. And there's, I forget which one of the James Bond films she's in. I can let you know in a second. Dr. No was where she was, with Sean Connery, of course. To me, who was the best James Bond, don't you think?
I like Sean Connery, too. I grew up with Sean Connery being the main James Bond, so to me, he'll always be James Bond as well.
That's how I feel. I think Roger Moore was okay, but he was too, can I say, effeminate, too sophisticated. He didn't have the masculinity, the macho-ness that, and the body that Sean Connery did. It's the same reason that in Cleopatra, Rex Harrison wore long sleeves. He had very skinny matchstick arms, and they didn't want to show that.
Did you see Zardoz with Sean Connery?
Of course, with the long pony. He's amazing with the long ponytail, and that's when he first showed the mustache.
That's one of my favorite science fiction films, Zardoz.
It's amazing. If you put that with Lysistrata, you've got some combination. They're, you know, it's really a bizarre film. And kind of based on, I almost want to say, 1984 and The Wizard of Oz combined.
Yes.
Wouldn't you say?
Wizard of Oz with a few letters in the front and the back missing.
Well, that's what they're reading. They think that's a Bible in a way. Yeah.
Yes.
It's a very interesting thing. The ending is kind of strange, you know, with all the death scenes and everything. And I think the ending of She is the same thing. You've got this eternal goddess who suddenly disintegrates. And he's going to now, this young guy, going to come back because he thinks he does believe he's her reincarnation and reincarnated lover. And he's going to now pine away for her for thousands of years till she comes back. And, you know, it's kind of a thing about, you know, love labor's lost, love labor's found. And that's kind of interesting. It has a bittersweetness. If she hadn't been killing all the people around off, she might have lived a little longer. She was not a kind ruler. She was a cruel ruler. And that's why the African tribesmen rebelled against her. And why the whole thing ends that way.
I'd like to rewatch it now. You've sparked my curiosity, and I want to see if I can find it. I probably have it somewhere in a box, so I'll look for it. Either that, or I'll check to see if it's on YouTube or Tubi or.
It's on the full movie is on YouTube. That's where I got it.
Okay.
I have it in a CD somewhere in a box that I'm not going to go look for it. But I found it on YouTube, and it was, you know, it was really kind of cool. There was no commercials. And it was, you know, the quality of the film wasn't very good. But that's okay. I'm sure it was somebody took it off their TV.
Yeah, but still, it's there, and that's the important thing. Now,
well,
we're down to our last. Go ahead.
No, I see where we are. Go ahead.
We're down to our last 5 minutes, and you have a lot of you're going to be back Thursday, and we're going to talk about Atlantis, which was learned by Solon from the Egyptians, according to legend, and Plato. So we're going to start our discussions on Atlantis, and you have a television show starting this week as well. You want to share something about that and then give your contact info?
This month. It's this month rather than this week. Yeah. Before we get into that, I just wanted to mention the Egyptians constantly talked about the sea people, and I believe in my heart those were the Atlanteans. I really do. And there's also a whole thing with star people, and I also believe those were the Atlanteans as well. But so let's go into contact things. I am very excited about my MNN network show that will be Michael K. Waterman, and it will be Michael K. Waterman Presents. So I will have different topics every time I get on. I don't know how long, if it's a monthly or bi-monthly show. I don't know yet. I've got to figure that out with them. But in the meantime, people can reach me at mkwaterman@icloud.com. You can write to me if you want to by mule, mail, as it were. That's Michael K. Waterman, 69 Nichols Street, first floor, Newark, New Jersey, 07105. The first time I'm giving this out. You can call me and make appointments for the various services and classes I teach, 516-650-3691. You can get me at Michael K. Waterman on Facebook. There will be a page coming up, which will be the Temple Pernateru on Facebook also, or you can get me at Phone a Wizard, which is my product and service line on Facebook. So Photo Wizard will have a list of my services and my products and my artwork.
Awesome. And I want to wish you great success on your new venture, and I'm looking forward to all our adventures together in the months ahead as well. Now, we have a couple of minutes left. Do you want to leave any last thoughts about ancient Egyptian unrequited love and mummies and immortal goddesses or anything along those lines?
Well, all I can think of or say, there were a lot of different things that were good. There's a whole book of love poetry written, which gets things from Nefertiti and Ankhesenamen to her husband, King Tut, Tutankhamen. Beautiful love poems. We also have in there different formulary written by different kings and queens of Egypt. One of them, I don't know if I should try, is Cleopatra's Cure for Baldness.
Really? Wow.
I don't know if it worked. Julius Caesar died bald, so I don't know, you know. But it also has the grief of a particular bear. Exactly. I agree. The formula has the grease from a particular bear, and the bear is extinct. So I don't know what to substitute that with. But I'm excited about the next thing. Well, you know, come on. There's all kinds of weird stuff. And, you know, she wasn't bald, so she didn't need that, right?
Right.
So I'm just going to say thank you to everybody for listening.
And thank you for
and
being
that
here.
I hope... You're
Go
welcome,
ahead.
And thank you for always being so kind.
And I'm looking forward to talking to you in a couple of days.
Oh, yeah. We'll be there on Thursday with bells on.
Be well, my friend, and thanks to all our listeners. We have 60 seconds according to the robot voice, so until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Good night, everybody, and thanks again, Sedna.
You're welcome, my friend. Take care. Bye-bye. Thank